This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. School board races and a record-setting bond referendum are both on the ballot next month. We talk about the school board contests later in the program, but begin with the big and expensive decision. Voters will decide the fate of a record-setting school bond package. The $922 million referendum would greenlight borrowing funds to build 10 new schools, replace 7 already existing schools, and renovate a dozen others. With one notable exception, school bonds tend to pass here, and there appears to be overwhelming support for these bonds among voters in most parts of the county, but not in the north. They feel they're being shortchanged. So we spend the first part of the program talking to both sides. Ann Clark is former CMS superintendent and a bond supporter. Welcome back. How's life in retirement?
Fantastic.
Well, glad to hear it. Jim Puckett is a Mecklenburg County Commissioner and a bond opponent. He will join us in our Spirit Square studio in a moment because he's stuck in that infamous I-77 southbound traffic, but he's here with us by phone. Jim, welcome.
Thanks.
$922 million is, I understand, the largest school bond package ever for Mecklenburg County. Why should voters say yes to this, Ann Clark?
Well, I think the first thing to understand is that $922 million is only half of the total need, which is over $2 billion of capital facility needs to either build new schools to address overcrowding, renovate existing schools, or add additions to schools where additional classroom space is needed. I think it's also important to know that 78% of the schools in Charlotte are over capacity and that there are 75 schools that were built more than 50 years ago. And our teachers and students deserve the best possible learning environment. And this $922 million bond package advances that significantly.
So why are you opposed to this, Jim Puckett? Why do you think voters should say no?
I think three things. One, there's a large component of this that has to do with a magnet program that I think oddly underserved the most at-risk kids that get left behind during that process. We can talk about that. Secondly, the process itself was horribly flawed and I think extraordinarily political, which is not wise. I'm kind of a process guy. But the biggest problem is it does turn its back on North Mecklenburg, and that is going to be disastrous down the road for CMS. CMS is essentially
welcome to your lot. Speak deposit and $10.
You're at the parking lot.
And I think that it's short-sighted, and they're going to lose the support they need and the tax base they need in the future.
Okay. And the Huntersville Town Council voted not to support these bonds, primarily because, as Jim Puckett said, they shortchanged the north, in their opinion. It won't benefit those schools up there. These schools are targeted to be in the southeast, southwest, not the northern part of the county. And you know the school system probably better than anyone on earth. The northern part of the county doesn't have needs that could be met through this bond?
Certainly there are needs across our entire county, but I think it's important, and I do have the history. Looking back since 2000 through 2013, the community has supported over $375 million in bonds to support District 1. I think it's also important to understand that building new schools is not the only way to relieve the overcrowding concerns in District 1 as well as other parts of the county. An example would be since 2007, 1,940 new magnet seats have been added to support giving more choices in District 1. With this particular bond package in 2017, that would add an additional almost 1,500 new seats, which is equivalent to opening a new middle school. And the other component to adding relief is also student assignment. We were able to move students from Huff High School to Hopewell where there was space, and that moved over 265 students from Huff to Hopewell. We also moved students from Washam Elementary to Cornelius Elementary, again, an overcrowded school, and moved students to a school where there was space. And it also is important to remember that since 2007, we've added almost 2,500 new seats in District 1.
I want you to respond while Jim is walking from the parking lot to the studio here to his accusation that this, the magnet section of this, the magnet part of the school bond package will hurt underserved or at-risk young people?
Just the opposite. Our news process for the magnet lottery actually holds seats, a third for low socioeconomic students, a third for middle socioeconomic students, and a third for high socioeconomic students based on the American Census Survey. So unlike in the past where it was truly just a lottery, it is now, there are intentional efforts were made to make sure students in our Title I schools were not only aware of the magnet choices, knew whether it would be a good fit. We opened up schools and computer labs and had folks there to help families understand their choices and navigate the online selection. But we're actually holding seats. A third of our seats would be held for students of high poverty.
So Jim is in our studio now. Welcome to the program in person.
Thank you.
In three dimensions. You talked about the process of this bond package design being flawed, and you said it was political. Were you opposed to these bonds prior to the adding of new buildings for West Charlotte High and Bruns Academy back in April, or is that what you're referring to when you talk about the flawed and political nature of this?
A couple of things to catch up real quick. One, Huntersville Town Council voted against, Cornelius Town Council voted against, and an unprecedented move. The late Norman Chamber of Commerce, 1,000 members, voted not to support these. So there's overwhelming opposition to this in North Mecklenburg, which is a problem. I did not support this early on because of the things that I'd mentioned, the very things I talked about. I understand the magnet portion of that. I think it's a bit when we talk about taking care of overcrowding in North Mecklenburg in the future with a magnet program, yet our new magnets are going to have a different lottery component that Ann talked about, those are at odds with each other. If you open up a magnet school in North Mecklenburg, but the students there are the lowest on the priority list, that doesn't help with the overcrowding. Again, I think the problem with the magnet component of this, as I've said all along, is that it is set up to allow parents who are engaged in their students' education and are in failing schools to escape those failing schools. And that's a noble cause. But the problem with that is that you end up with an awful lot of at-risk kids whose parents are not engaged. They do not have the ability then to escape the failing schools. And there's not a real clear path to what we're going to do with turning the failing school around. So we are offering up at about $150 million a way for some kids to escape a failing school, but we've yet to talk about how we're going to fix the failing school. There is part of the process is we may put a magnet in the failing school then, but that assumes that the folks from my areas and the suburbs are going to go there. That's a 25-year-old plan that is becoming less and less relevant because the public is not engaging with CMS anymore, and that's the biggest concern I have. That's the problem I have with this not building capacity in the north. CMS, as we sit here today, and Ann, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going to use general numbers. CMS projected about 750 new students entering this fall. There were somewhere around 3,000 students that will enter charter schools. We don't know how many will be in public schools. And for the first time ever, last year in North Carolina, and I assume it's similar in Mecklenburg County, there are more children homeschooled than in private school. So the public is leaving or choosing not to even engage in the public school system. And when I went on the Board of Education in 97, that was the only option you had, and they started finding ways out. You now have charter schools, parochial schools, homeschooling growing. So the idea that I think your problem is 10 years from now, you're going to turn around and find out that the suburban tax base you need is not there anymore.
So, Ann, there's a lot in that. I don't know where to begin. Go ahead and respond to that.
So I think one of the things that we spent 18 months as a community and certainly the school board and district officials implementing a student assignment plan. And there were two components to that student assignment plan. The first, we led with choice, adding new magnet programs, geographically placing those across the city, looking at places where we could also reassign students to reduce the concentrations of poverty, which did create space for a magnet program. A great example would be Walter G. Byers. Walter G. Byers will now have a medical science magnet that will feed Hawthorne, which is one of our most successful magnet programs with high demand and a waiting list. Walter G. Byers is a K-8 school. And so in order for students to gain access to Hawthorne, the way to do that is going to be through Walter G. Byers. And we reassigned significant numbers of students away from Walter G. Byers, which was one of our highest poverty schools in the district, to create space for that magnet. And you have to be strategic about placing a high-demand magnet in a location where there has been historically high poverty.
There are many reasons that parents choose to take their kids out of public schools and put them in magnet schools or private schools or homeschool them or whatever the other choices may be. And there are probably as many reasons as there are people who do this. But do you worry, as somebody who spent your entire career at CMS and who ran the school system for several years, do you worry that we've asked the public schools to do too much and that the school system is too big to serve the population of Mecklenburg County and serve the various needs of the various areas of Mecklenburg County? Or do we run the risk at some point in the very near future of having to break this behemoth up?
Well, certainly I believe our district needs to stay as the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools, a city-county merged district as it has been for so many decades. But I do think the district has a responsibility, and the district has responded to that responsibility by adding different choices and options for our students. Mm-hmm. We have early college opportunities for students on the UNC Charlotte campus. We have four options for middle college programs on the community college campus, trying to create as many different options for our students to respond to what our families are telling us they want. They're telling us they want more language immersion closer to home. So we're adding a K-8 language immersion in Huntersville that is a part of the 2017 bond package. We heard from parents that they wanted computer science. We now have three computer science coding magnets in three different locations in our county, and we'll be adding a middle school in the 2018-19 school year.
So what do you say to the people in the northern part of the county about their lack of support, or at least among the leaders of northern Mecklenburg County, there's a lack of support for this? What do you say to them?
So as I spent 18 months doing superintendent coffees all over the county and certainly very strategically in many of the schools in the northern part of our county, many of our newer schools that were more recently built like Grand Oaks and Barnett, I did not hear from parents that there would be a lack of support for this coming bond pageant. I was very transparent about what the opportunities were going to be in the north. I reminded them of the 3,000 new magnet seats that create new seats, not in necessarily a new school. In some cases, Alexander Middle would be a new school, but 3,400 new seats since 2007 in the north is another way, without building a new school, to create those seats and give the relief. As I was mentioning, as Jim was coming in, student assignment helped to provide relief to overcrowded schools, Washam and Huff being two very specific examples. So I think, you know, it is a three-pronged strategy to address the overcrowding, not just in District 1, but across our county, as in looking at ways that where we have schools with space, we can add magnets. I also would want to add that we've been good stewards of the taxpayer dollar in terms of looking at places where we had surplus land and selling that land so that we could be a part of the solution.
So when we come back, I want to talk about process, because you're a process guy, Jim Puckett. We'll talk about how this bond package was arrived at, why certain areas get things and other areas don't. We'll continue in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Providence Day School, hosting fall open houses and personal visitation days for families to discover if Providence Day is the right fit. Information at providenceday.org/admissions. And jobsrockhill.com, offering a range of employer resources dedicated to connecting York County businesses with York County job seekers. Detailed information for both employers and job seekers at jobsrockhill.com/NPR. Well, after weeks of controversy, the firestorm over NFL players protesting during the national anthem refuses to lose steam. Owners are meeting this week. Players around the league say they're using their platform to raise awareness of racism and police brutality against African Americans. But, of course, some fans see this as unpatriotic, disrespectful, and inappropriate. This is not the first time politics and sports have intersected, and we examine what happens when they do tomorrow at 9.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, President Trump decertifies the Iran nuclear deal. What now? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
You can listen to that conversation on Point from 10 till noon following Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins here on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I don't know where that came from. I'm Mike Collins, along with Jim Puckett, county commissioner and a school bond opponent, Ann Clark, former CMS superintendent, and in favor of the $922 million school bond that will be on the ballot in November. There will be no tax increase required to service the debt on these bonds. Jim Puckett, how is that possible?
Well, that's legally true, but in reality, that doesn't mean that there would not be a tax increase. What happens is there is no tax increase directly tied to repayment of bonds. However, should we have another recession like we did in 2008, should tax revenues drop significantly, and that is possible, not probable, but possible, the number one payment we make is our bond debt. Mm-hmm. So we either then have to slash services to take care of that because revenues are down, or we have to raise taxes. So it's not directly related to bonds, but bonds are a debt. It's like a mortgage
that
you can't go away from.
But that doesn't play into your decision to oppose these.
No, it doesn't. No, and I have no problem with that because we managed to that. And the other side of that is, and that's part of the problem, is Mecklenburg County is very, very committed to a fiscally strong tax structure. And because of that, the next opportunity we will have, if these bonds pass, for another significant bond package will be 7 years from now, mm-hmm. because we will not go beyond our set limits. So for the folks in North Mecklenburg, you're looking at 7 years before another bond package. If that package included projects for North Mecklenburg and passed, you're 3 years before you open the doors on a school after that. So you have a decade before any capacity because of the tax structure that we have. Part of the process, we were talking about that, is CMS did not go and talk to the staff, the planning staff, in the three towns to talk about their growth revenue. Mm-hmm. Over that period of time, we predict that the growth will be 60,000 people. So you're not going to be able to absorb that through some expanded magnet programs or capacity that we have.
So, Ann, if that's true, why?
So a couple of things. First of all, you mentioned the process, and Jim mentioned the fact that it was political. I would argue that we've used the same rubric for the 2007, 2013, and now 2017 bond. We evaluated every school on 15 different components. We looked at growth. We do work closely with county and the small towns and the planning staff. That's something that we've had in place for a number of years, and we ranked our schools. If it had been a political process, we would have had an equal number of projects in each of the six districts.
So did the opposition in the North surprise you and people within the school system? And if whether it did or not, why did they not get what they feel is a fair share of this bond package?
Well, I think it's a matter of holding to a rubric and scoring each school and the need in each district using a common rubric. If we had wanted to be political, we would have had 5 to 6 projects in each of the six districts, but that would not have reflected the need and would have run counter to the score.
Then I have a question about that. And, there are those of us who disagree with the rubric, and that's neither here nor there. I mean, you know, you're – school system had what it wants, but even, you know, Rhonda Lennon, the board member up there, has said that she has repeatedly said she thinks the rubric is broken. But if that are the case, and we did talk about this for 18 years, after the final meeting, joint meeting with the Board of Education, the Board of County Commission, we had a list of 30 projects. The rubric designed those 30 projects. And then After that meeting, before it came to us, West Charlotte moved up 28 slots and Bruns moved up some number, 12 slots, out of nowhere and became part of this bond package, $122 million. So the rubric apparently is only good up until the point that politics comes into it.
But, Jim, I mean, could it not be argued successfully that the West Side has greater needs than most other parts of
the
county?
And the West Side in this bond package has about six projects where the North doesn't. District 1 has two projects. District 1, though, is not North Mecklenburg. One of those projects is Mountain Island Lake. That is not in Huntersville. It's inside the city limits of Charlotte. And the second one is a magnet school at Alexander, which is 1/2 mile north of the Charlotte city limits. So the West Side has gotten an awful lot. And I hear this notion, and it's true, of how much money has gone to the North since the year 2000. But what we don't talk about is how much money was spent from 1952 to 2000. Because prior to opening Hopewell High School, the last high school in North Mecklenburg opened in 1952. So there was
But there was no population.
But it grew. There wasn't in 52, but there were in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And so the money spent from 2000 to 2017 were, one, a result of a change in federal law regarding busing, and two, to catch up on past capacity. So we understand. So you really have to look at a much broader period of time than just that.
So talk about the need elsewhere, Ann. This money will go to build 10 new schools, replace 7 other schools, allow for renovations and additions to, I think, a dozen more schools. Over this entire period of time, how long will that take to accomplish?
Well, certainly, as Jim knows, the county releases dollars over a schedule, so they set the pace with which the dollars will be released. Mm-hmm. One of the things that was hugely helpful to us is the county did advance us close to $32 million to begin purchasing land and designing schools where we had land for projects on this 2017 package. So, for example, Collinswood. We have the land, so we could start immediately on the design work.
So if voters say yes to this package, despite the feelings in the northern part of the county, if they say yes, if something happens in the northern part of the county in the next 5 years, if the population does explode, can that money be shifted to projects in that part of the county, or does it have to stay dedicated to what the voters said when they said yes to a bond proposal that says it's going here? Can you make changes is the question.
So certainly our past history, and it would certainly be a Board of Education decision, and obviously working in close concert with the county manager and the Board of County Commissioners, we have stayed true to what we said the bond dollars were going to go for. We have, in fact, done that. And I would remind our public that we have a bond oversight committee reviews and tracks our progress on all of our bond projects.
Jim says that there's overwhelmingly negative feelings toward this bond package in the northern part of the county, particularly from town councils and chambers of commerce up there. But I'm told the other side, the vote yes for bond size, sees overwhelming support in the other areas of the county. Can you win without northern Mecklenburg's support?
So I guess what I would say as I walk through life in the northern part of the county, I don't hear a lack of support for the bond as I talk to CMS parents. And I didn't get that sense for 18 months prior to my departure as I met with parents at schools in the north across District 1 because many of them were sitting in fabulous media centers. And I was quick to tell them that the media centers at Montclair and Briarwood and Shamrock Gardens and Collinswood did not look like the library that we were sitting in.
What about that, Jim?
Well, here's the problem, and it probably will pass. And the people, when you go and ask CMS parents if they support CMS schools, you shouldn't be surprised by that. If you go and talk to charter school people, you may get a different answer. I am here not as a critic, but as someone warning the future. The people who are going to be upset about this are the 60,000 people who are going to show up, not find capacity, and are going to turn away. There is a movement up there to break away to a different school system already. This adds fuel to that fire. And in the future, the people who are not here, the folks living in Ohio that are headed this way, who show up and realize there's no schools there and they're a decade away from it, are the ones that are going to
leave. So what happens if this bond package loses? When's the next possible time that this could be readjusted and to the pleasure of the North
and the North is just more public. I think the South, Matthews is clearly not happy with CMS. They are stopping their own charter school. So it could happen at the next election, which would be a primary. That's not necessarily the best time to do it. It could be next November. I know the three Republicans and Pat Cotham have already stated that if this bond package were to fail, that we will step up, as we have in the past, with monies from the county to take care of urgent needs to buy that time to get it right.
But if this were to be changed in any way, either it can't be changed now, but if it doesn't pass and you take a second shot at this in 2 years or a year, aren't you going to have to shortchange somebody? Aren't you going to have to west side to make the northern part of the county happy?
You have, as Ann said, you have a $2 billion need and a $1 billion ask. So you're shortchanging someone. I think you have to, and part of my problem is I don't see the Board of Education has not done a good job of articulating exactly how they're going to deal with this over the next decade. It took them 18 months just to kind of figure out what they're going to do with pupil assignment, and much of what they decided has made many people unhappy. There are an awful lot of board members on my board that don't like K-8, for example, many people within the public. We have a new superintendent. You know, I think he needs a chance to have some buy-in. But, we can't build it all, and we have to make smarter decisions. The process has to be better. We can't keep building high schools that we board up and make elementary schools, for example. So, we can't afford those kind of mistakes.
And how many times have we done that?
Well, we did it with the last bond package. The newest high school in Mecklenburg County, Waddell High School, was built in the wrong place. It was slated as a southern high school to help with overcrowding in the southern part of the county, and it was built west of I-77 on Nations Ford Road. Opened up as a state-of-the-art high school, was closed shortly after, and then became an elementary school. Mm. It's now going to become a high school again, but I see the same problems going forward that we saw in that.
There's an organized effort for these bonds to pass. Is there an organized effort for these bonds to fail?
No, I'm probably it, and I'm not very organized. So, look, for my agenda, for the people that I represent who think that CMS is too large, who thinks that CMS is not serving the entire people, this passing this bond probably speeds up the process of trying to break up CMS. So in some ways, it's I win either way. But I do care about this county. Ann is right. The thing that we have going for us is a consolidated school system. Mm-hmm. But CMS has forgotten about that consolidated part of it. And I think they're turning their backs on the suburbs that is the tax revenue they need. And I think they're going to lose it. They've lost it, and they're going to lose it even quicker.
You ran the schools for years. Does that worry you, that will happen as a result of the passage of these bonds with a lot of bad tastes in people's mouth up north?
Well, I certainly don't believe that's going to be the case, but I certainly respect Jim's position. You know, I would want to remind our families and our citizens in District 1 that in the next 29 projects that would come following our rubric, there would be over $220 million in District 1 investment, including a new high school. I'd also like to add to the history that Commissioner Puckett provided to say what has happened in the North since 1997. We've built four high schools in District 1. I opened Vance High School in 1997. We've opened Hopewell, Mallard Creek, and Huff. So in a 20-year period of time, we have opened up four high schools in District 1.
So there are a lot of people who are upset with the student assignment plan, and there are people in the North who don't like this bond package. Does it worry you that the combination of the two will defeat this bond package?
I have confidence in this community and its commitment to public education.
And if voters approve these bonds, when does this all begin? When does construction begin?
Again, thanks to the work of the County Commission, we are shovel-ready at several school sites and have designs done in others, and we've been able to purchase land for a school down in the southwest corridor near Steel Creek. So we are better positioned, thanks to the advance that was given to us. That's a part of this bond package, but will allow us to begin work immediately in January.
Ann Clark, former superintendent of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools, on the vote yes side for the bonds in November, the $922 million package. Jim Puckett, county commissioner and a bond opponent. Thank you both for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, the poll that indicates overwhelming support for the school bonds had a mixed bag of news for CMS in general. Nearly a quarter of those polls said they were less confident in the school system today compared to a year ago. 10% were more confident. 46% felt the same. The poll comes on the heels of the controversial student assignment plan and the arrival of Clayton Wilcox as school superintendent, the system's fifth in a decade. The poll's results provide some things for both voters and candidates for school board to think about in the upcoming election. There are 6 district seats up for grabs, and 3 are guaranteed to have new faces because the incumbents have decided not to run. We're going to get the expertise of 2 of the area's education reporters to talk about all of this. Ann Doss Helms is education reporter for the Charlotte Observer and a frequent panelist on our Friday News Roundups. Welcome back. Weren't you
Thank
just
you.
Here?
Is it Friday News Roundup again? This week has flown by.
And Dedrick Russell, WBTV's education reporter. Welcome to you.
Good morning. Thank
morning.
You.
Morning. You wrote, Anne, and we talked about this before on this program, that you believe the school board election deserves at least as much attention as the mayor's race. Why?
Well, for one thing, that same poll showed when people asked what they were concerned about in the mayor's race, education was the number one priority. And if you are spending your time trying to figure out whether Vi Lyles or Kenny Smith is the best person to fix education, you're wasting your time. Stop. They don't have that job. The people who have that job are the school board. And these 6 members who are being elected by district, these seats were created in the mid-90s. Before that, they were all elected countywide. You tended to have a lot of white people from the most affluent neighborhoods. These seats were created to give you not only people who represent the whole district, but who serve as a voice for your neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. And is that working from the roster of candidates that you've seen out there?
Well, people have a distinct choice. So again, if you just go in and if you either don't bother to vote or you go in and you say, oh man, I didn't bother to look up the candidates and I'm going to flip a coin, you are not going to like these candidates equally. You have a serious choice, and that's a good thing.
So, Dedrick, are people following this race? Is the media covering this race as well as it's covering the horse race between Kenny Smith and Vi Lyles?
Well, I believe that wherever you go, there are news outlets that are covering the school board race. The voters just have to do their homework and find out where they can get that information.
It's hard to cover this race. There's so many people, and it's not as sexy as the mayor's race.
Well, it depends. It depends. You know, you have student assignment, you have the bonds, you have the equity committee that people are trying to come back. You're trying to talk about the education of African Americans. Mm-hmm. So there are issues out there that people are concerned about. I think the problem is that people don't know how to navigate how to fix that problem.
Yeah.
Instead, like Ann was saying, instead of people looking at the mayor to fix the school problem, they need to look at their school board members.
Yeah.
And you just have to learn how to navigate that. So it is a very, very important race, because keep in mind that whoever wins, they will be in that seat for the next 4 years, not like 2 years like the mayor, but 4 years. And that could be a life-changing, a game-changing for some students who are still stuck in some low-performing schools.
And the thing that makes it tough for us in the media, which is that each person votes in only one district,
yeah,
makes it easier for the voters. So you don't have to know these 19 candidates. You have
right.
to know
yours.
What district you're in. And I have put links in every story I've written saying, here, click on this and look yourself up.
And there are 2 to 4 candidates in these districts, which we'll talk about when we come back from the break. But how many races are there?
Six races.
How many people?
19. There will be 20 on the ballot. There's one person who's not actually running who's on the ballot.
And is part of the problem here that these are nonpartisan races and people tend to vote Republican, Democrat, or pick between the two?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There are nonpartisan. So you just have to go for the best candidate and the person who is going
Although
to be best.
Although the parties will be working to let you know who their people are.
All right.
There are some endorsements out there, you know, like the Black Political Caucus, Charlotte Mecklenburg Association.
We have to
educators.
Stop. We must
okay.
stop. We're right. coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, serving the people of North Carolina for 84 years. Blue Cross North Carolina offers dozens of health plans and provides access to thousands of in-network doctors. Also, Hefner Financial of Charlotte. Jim Hefner is an independent fiduciary financial planner whose team specializes in retirement solutions and tax strategies. Information at youlljustknow.com. calling it one of the worst deals the U.S. has ever entered into. President Trump is refusing to recertify the nuclear agreement with Iran, but that doesn't mean the U.S. is getting out of the deal, at least not for now. They'll be talking about that in 20 minutes during On Point. And you can join us next Tuesday, October 24th, for a live mayoral debate between Vi Lyles and Kenny Smith. And we'll ask about community relations, public safety, and more from McGlohan Theater at Spirit Square. Details at WFAE.org. We're coming right back.
Author and public radio commentator David Sedaris will share stories from his latest book, Theft by Finding, Diaries 1977 through 2002. Enjoy an evening of humor and satire Saturday, October 21st at 8 at Ovens Auditorium. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com. WFAE is pleased to be a media partner.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the school board races because there are six districts for which there are candidates in play for the November election. Edric Russell is here from WBTV News. He's the education reporter there. And Doss Helms serves the same function for the Charlotte Observer. So let's talk about these races, and let's go through them numerically. Let's start with District 1, which is in northern Mecklenburg County, which is a hotbed of...
Yeah, it's a good transition because we were just talking about the dynamics of District 1, and it kind of sits up on top of the county like a hat with ear flaps. Most of it is the north suburbs, Davidson, Cornelius, Huntersville, but there are these two little parts that drop down into Charlotte, and so you have, you know, some city dynamics. It's actually a majority, slim plurality Democratic district, which surprised me. So you've got Rhonda Lennon as the incumbent, has served two terms, running for a third, and she is kind of the quintessential suburban candidate.
And even though this is a nonpartisan race, it could be argued she's a Republican.
She is a Republican, uh-huh. And the Republicans will be letting people know that. The other two are Democrats.
Right. Okay.
She emerged as a parent activist during one of these rounds that Jim Puckett talked about when they got overlooked in construction. She has been kind of a voice for the people up there who love their schools and are suspicious of Charlotte sometimes. And so now she's got two challengers, both of whom live in Charlotte, one in the northwest and one in the northeast.
So let's be clear here. The challengers are Annette Albright and Jess Miller, although Amy Hallman will be on the ballot.
Yes. So you can vote for Amy, but she has not campaigned. She has not run. She
changed her mind after
submitting. Yeah, and it's a weird dynamic that there's a point at which you can get on, but you can't get off the ballot. So
right.
That's what happened to her.
So her name will be there, but she doesn't want to serve, and she's not really running. So that leaves three. Jess Miller and Rhonda Lennon both oppose the bonds, while Annette Albright supports them. Is that going to be the key issue in this race, Dendry, the bonds?
Well, it might. Well, District 1, as you just talked about it,
mm-hmm.
They're against the bond. Like,
yes.
Like Norman Charter, Chamber of Commerce, Huntersville, they're all against the bond. So that may fare well for them.
Are the people against the bond?
Well, you know, I did that story on Friday, and when I was trying to get some talking to parents, some of them didn't even know that there was a bond referendum on this year's ballot in a few weeks. So I found that very interesting when I tried to talk to them. I went to Cornelius Elementary School. I talked to some parents. They said, oh, I didn't know. So that's going to be very interesting how the bonds will play into that. But I wanted to say that two of the candidates, they work for charter schools. So it's going to be a very interesting dynamic. Jess Miller and Annette Albright, they are employees of charter schools. And some people would say, you know, can you be an employee of a charter school and still be on the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board? So I think that is going to be an interesting dynamic for District 1.
And the flip side would be that Annette Albright has worked for Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, she will be suing herself if she wins,
right,
because she's suing the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Board of Education over the way her dismissal played out. She was attacked by students, basically, at Harding High. And we probably don't have time to delve deep into that. Jess Miller does not have children, has done some contract work for CMS, but does
attend. She's working to launch her own charter school, I believe.
Yes, but she does attend a lot of board meetings. She has been paying attention and is invested in what's going on with CMS. So I don't think any of them is totally clueless. I don't think any of them is just,
right,
you know, a bomb chucker trying to destroy the school system. But it's a clear, distinct choice that they will have in District 1.
So District 2, this race pits two people with a history of public education, incumbent Thelma Byers-Bailey and Lenora Shipp. Byers-Bailey is seeking her second term. She's a retired lawyer. Shipp is a retired CMS principal. And for people who don't know, what part of town does District 2 fall in?
Two is West Charlotte, kind of the historic black part of Charlotte, and it's also Southwest Charlotte, which is probably one of the fastest growing and changing parts of Charlotte and will continue to be for many years to come.
This is a district that will benefit from the school bond package passing. Both these candidates support the mix of neighborhood schools and magnets that will come out of the student assignment plan. So what are the issues here, Dedrick? I mean, is there a difference between these two candidates?
Well, I guess when you go with District 2, that is a large population of your African American population there. You got Bronze and you have and Project Lift. So that district really needs to step forward. And when it comes to the education of all students, I know that the equity committee, that once upon a time there was an equity committee formed in CMS to make sure that no matter your zip code that you are getting the same type of resources that you would get at a West Charlotte High, that you would get at Audrey Kell High School. Mm-hmm. So, and District 2 is known as a district that fights for its people. The former District 2, Velma Leek, so everyone knows Velma Leek, that she was a fighter for District 2. So District 2 is known and is used to having someone at the dais fighting for them, fighting for everything. You know, you have Thelma Byers-Bailey, who unseated Richard McElrath, and you have Lenora Shipp. So that is an area where people want to make sure that the kids are getting the education. Because when you look at the test scores there at the District 2, we're talking about a 30% proficiency rate, 20% proficiency rate. And I think the community now is saying enough is enough.
Yep.
We want to make sure that our students are getting a well-rounded education. And when they graduate from high school, that they will be college and career ready. And when you look at the test scores, that is not the case. So this next person, all eyes will be on that person to make sure that things get better for District 2 and that the Project Lift, that things get better because they're saying no more.
And I think what Lenora Shipp would say is, I've been in those schools.
Right.
I've run schools throughout that district. I know actually what it takes to make a turnaround. And what Thelma Byers-Bailey is likely to say is, we've got this bond package. We got, whether you like it or not, if you're Jim Puckett, you know, we got these two major projects for our people, and I made that motion. I made that happen.
The other, Dedrick just said this is historically African-American area, this district. But you point out in an article you wrote not too long ago, Ann, that this is also an area that is overflowing suddenly with newcomers. What dynamic is that going to play in all of this? They may not have the same interests as the population, so to speak.
Well, just look at Bronze Elementary School. The new people in there, they fought for a new Bronze Academy. That's a K-8 school, and they fought to make it a K-5 school. So you have more educated people who are coming into District 2. You have people who know how to fight, people who won't give up, and they got a return on their investment because at the end of the day, there is a new West Charlotte on this bond referendum and a new Bronze Academy on this bond referendum. So I think you have people who are banding together to make sure, hey, let's go march down to wherever we need to do in order to get what we need to get. And an interesting thing, you know, recently I moderated a school board for the Black Political Caucus, and they had to do a questionnaire on grading the school board. Thelma Byers-Bailey and Lenora Shipp, they both gave the school board a D when it comes to responding to the African-American concerns of the African-American community. So I thought that was very interesting that here you have the school board, and the school board gave herself a D for responding to a majority of the people who she serves. So that's very interesting.
So before we don't want to run out of time before we hit all six districts, where is District 3?
Sort of northwest, basically. University City area is the best known part of it, a very economically, ethnically, racially diverse community, although majority black and majority Democratic.
So this is, there are a lot of people in this race in District 3, six people. The incumbent is Ruby Jones, but she was appointed to the seat in 2015 when Joyce Waddell was elected to the state Senate. So no one in this district has ever been elected to a position on the school board. Will that make a difference?
I think this may be the toughest race for voters because there's not some clear, distinct issue that either you're for this or against that. All of them have some credibility of saying, I've done this to be involved with the school district. None of them, well, Ruby Jones does have a record. She's been there for, as Dedrick pointed out, these terms are so long that even a partial term is longer than a full term on the city. So she has a record. She will be an incumbent, but there are basically three sort of really veteran, longtime, over 60 people who may be splitting kind of that community and their three younger challengers.
So we have Ruby Jones, Emmett Butts, Lavester Flowers, Janine Bryant, Blanche Penn, and Olivia Scott. How do you pick them apart? How do you make a decision? What are they running on?
You know, it's like name recognition. You know, when you go into the ballot, you know, if you don't know what the issues are and what you're looking for, you're just going to say, name recognition.
How do you find those issues? How do you find the candidate's position on X, Y, or Z?
Well, we have, and I think you probably have the link at your WFAE Charlotte Talks page. We have done a questionnaire. Lots of groups have done questionnaires. Groups are doing endorsements. I think in this group, the Charlotte Mecklenburg Association of Educators is endorsing Ruby Jones. Blanche Penn, who is a longtime activist but first-time candidate, has the Black Political Caucus endorsement. You just need to look them up. They all have websites. Some are doing better than others at reaching out to the community. I would say Ruby Jones, Blanche Penn, and Lavester Flowers are all kind of the older generation, well-known within certain circles. Janine Bryant is younger, a former Teach for America teacher. Mm-hmm. NCMS has done a lot of education, advocacy, and support activities. Olivia Scott is 25. She is the youngest candidate in this race by quite a long shot. And Emmett Butts is a teacher in Cabarrus County, I think not really well-known here yet. His campaign manager says he's well-known in surrounding counties.
But he lives in Mecklenburg?
He lives in Mecklenburg, right. And this district goes right up to the Cabarrus County lines. Right.
So District 4 is up next. No incumbent once again. Tom Tate has decided to step down from representing this East Charlotte district. He's backing Carol Sawyer, who's making her first run for office. Her opponent is Queen Thompson, attempting her third run. Stephanie Sneed is another newcomer who has been endorsed by the Black Political Caucus. What makes this district different? How do these candidates reflect those differences? What are voters in that district looking for? Tedrick.
Well, you know, Carol Sawyer, she has been to, like, policy committee meetings. So, you know, she has been there and all the way. And I know that she is an advocate on bringing back the equity committee. And I know that, you know, making sure that African Americans are getting what they need out of CMS. I know that that is going to be a main issue in this race. You know, I get, name recognition is what it is, and also the endorsements. You know, if you don't want to do the homework to figure out who I need to vote for, if you're leaning on the Charlotte Mecklenburg Area Association, if you're leaning on the Black Political Caucus or the Charlotte Observer, you will rely on them to do your homework. So this is going to be a very interesting race because, you know, because Queen Thompson, she's very passionate about what she's going out for. And then, you know, Stephanie Sneed, she also got an endorsement. So it's just going to be very interesting with this.
You described Carol Sawyer as sharing an endorsement with Stephanie Sneed from the Charlotte Mecklenburg Association of Educators. She's an activist. She founded Mecklenburg ACTS. She likes the paired school approach, which the student assignment plan has suddenly put into place. Sneed believes a moratorium on K-2 suspensions is a step toward providing equal opportunities for all students. Queen Thompson, a retired social worker, believes her background gives her the best insights into helping students who face challenges. Which message is likely to resonate?
Or do we that's a great question. Okay. I think Carol is like the default incumbent. She was really active in One MEC, which became very well known during the students. If you know anything about this, you know Carol, and you either really want her in or you really don't want her in. And these other two are going to be, you know, I think really competing for the people who think she's not a good
choice. So District 5 is another district in which an incumbent has decided not to run. Eric Davis, former school board chair and a very big force on the school board for years, leaving the field to Margaret Marshall, Jim Peterson, and Jeremy Stevenson. Talk about the district itself.
It is kind of the power wedge, that little chunk of South Charlotte, not all the way down to the border, but some of the most prestigious neighborhoods. This is always a district where spending outstrips any of the others. We have Margaret Marshall has raised more than $50,000 in a race where very few other candidates in any of the districts have raised more than $10,000. So it has a voice.
So assuming that people liked the kind of leadership and the positions that Eric Davis, who held that seat for so long, took, and wasn't he at large for a while and then he took a district seat, Eric Davis, or am I wrong?
No, he's always been district, but he was elected chair as a district.
Okay, so if people liked what he thought, who would they choose to replace him?
Margaret Marshall. He has made it clear that that's who he endorses. She's got kind of a long list of endorsements from people in those circles.
And she says, as having been a PTA officer, that it's time to take a breath on big initiatives and focus on growth and learning. While Jim Peterson says he's a fan of neighborhood schools and talks about building fundamental math and reading skills. District 6.
Oh, we did skip Jeremy Stevenson.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We should say him also because he is the intensely Republican.
Yes, he is.
He is a Republican.
I believe is he.
He has his child in a charter school, and he pitches that as he's sort of the vocal advocate, and she's the person who's been behind the scenes doing the work. And I think voters will decide which of those they like better.
No incumbent in District 6. Where is it?
It is that little south wedge that goes, it almost looks like a little check mark. It basically carves off the south suburbs, a little bit of west and a lot of east.
Two candidates, Alan Smith and Sean Strain. What are they advocating for, Edric?
Well, I know Sean Strain. I know he works with the group that meets right after Tuesday Morning Breakfast Club.
Charlotte Mecklenburg.
United.
CMS
Education.
Families United for Public Education.
Yes, yes, yes. He works strongly with them. And I think the Paul Bailey has endorsed Sean Strain. So District 6, that involves the Matthews-Mint Hill area. And as Jim Puckett was saying, that there is legislation right now for that section to create its own charter school. So therefore, you know, you're going to have to ask them, are you for Matthews-Mint Hill developing its own charter school, or are you for them staying with CMS and making it better?
And Alan Smith is his polar opposite. This is the classic case of if you don't vote or if you walk in and go, eeny, miny, meeny, meeny, miny, oh, shame on you, because Alan Smith is unaffiliated, describes himself as progressive. Sean Strain is Republican, fairly conservative. Alan Smith has said he would like to reopen student assignment and not immediately turn it over, but go toward the controlled choice, which is a real hot button topic in that area.
That would break the link between where you live and what school
you go
to. And Sean Strain wants neighborhood schools.
And one thing with District 6, you know, student assignment plan is going to be reopened sooner rather than later. They usually say every 6 years, but it's going to be done sooner rather than later. And those schools that were not touched this go-round will be touched next go-round. And we're talking about District 6. Those schools probably will be touched next go-round. So you're going to have a strong District 6 person who's going to stand up for the people.
So we have 10 seconds. Given the fact that there's so many races here with no incumbent, this is going to change the face of the school board. It's an off-year election. How's that going to impact this voter turnout?
It means that very few people make very important decisions.
Okay. Ann Doss Helms, education reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Dedrick Russell, education reporter for WBTV.
All right. On your side.
Thanks.